America Trends Podcast is part of the MHNR Network. MHNRnetwork.com.
What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends. I'm Larry Rifkin. I doubt there's anyone in our sophisticated audience unaware of the nursing shortage in America. You may think it's all COVID-related, but that's not the whole story by any means. The expectations and demands that we place on nurses grows over time, just as corporate overlords in hospitals add to the stress. Our caring workforce of nurses needs support from others in the field. And maybe if we took better care of ourselves, their situation wouldn't be so challenging. A leading expert in the field explains it all today on America Trends.
With us on America Trends is Dr. Peter Bearhouse. He is a nurse, he's a PhD, and he's a healthcare economist at Montana State University. And this is a topic that is really in the news today. And I've got to ask you, Professor, is it unusual for you to hear many news outlets talking about this nursing shortage? Because it's been going on for some time, but it's finally gotten amazing attention across the country. Of course, there's a pandemic going on, so perhaps it makes sense.
Yeah, that's an interesting question because I've been at sort of this work for 20, I guess maybe closer to 30 years now, and things sort of wax and wane, and my sense is over the past month or so, things have really picked up significantly in terms of media interest and stories, information that we're hearing. And so I think we are in a period where there's intense focus on nursing shortage, and I'm glad there is, and I hope that in our discussion we can talk about how we talk about nursing, because I think we're potentially at some danger points.
Well, explain what you mean by that. I think most people give it all a common refrain, and yet as I've been doing my research to get ready to talk to an expert like yourself, I realize that there are so many different disciplines within nursing. The shortages are varied and they are pointed toward different parts of the country. Some of them may be related to the pandemic. Some are just related to normal cycles, as you talk about. There's a whole range of things going on here.
Yeah, and let me just walk through a couple of those and then we can jump right into what makes this pandemic a bit unusual. And you know, if we can think about shortages, they come in different shapes and sizes and varieties, and one of them is what I will call like a background shortage. There are always some places around the country, some hospitals, some organizations that are reporting a shortage of nurses. And they can arise from various sorts of unusual things happening on the supply side or the demand side. And if we have time, we could walk through some of them. But these shortages are usually temporary. They last for a little while. They're acute. They affect that organization. But then they resolve. They don't spread. They don't become large. Then you have other shortages that are sort of what almost static shortages. They're just chronic. And you can think of, say, rural areas, rural hospitals that just have a hard time attracting and maintaining adequate nursing supply. A third shortage is the one that I think people have are aware of, and these are the large national shortages. These are shortages that we could measure them by, say, hospitals would report collectively 50 to 150,000 open positions that they can't fill. and they're trying to fill. Now, those shortages are across the country. They affect quality of care. They affect safety. It causes some hospitals to reduce their hours of operation on certain parts of their enterprise, maybe curtail services because it's staffing. You just can't find enough staffing. And we used to have a lot of those, what I'll call the big Category 5 shortages, from back in the 60s all the way up through 2000. The last big Cat 5 shortage was in 2001 when hospitals reported shortages of about 126,000 open positions. So that's sort of a brief history. And then what happened with the COVID is a bit unusual in that around 2010, the baby boom generation of nurses, that's a 1.2 million nurses born in the baby boom generation, they began to start retiring out. Now, Mary, initially we estimated this was about 60,000 nurses who would leave the workforce each year. But now we estimate it's closer to about 70,000. And we knew this was coming. We forecast all this. So when these nurses leave, they're taking 20, 30, even more years of experience within clinical experience, judgment, leadership, mentorship, being able to just get things done for the patient. That's leaving with them. And some of these nurses were in ICUs, in critical care units, specialty care units, and hospitals were reporting back around 2016 and 17 that they were unable to fully replace a retiring nurse with new graduates. So prior to the pandemic, we were already seeing hospitals with shortages caused by retiring nurses. Now, there's one other factor I'd like to talk about, but let me pause and see if that makes sense or if I've...
Oh, absolutely. Read where the average age of a nurse is around 50, and I'm just wondering, because I'm reading about RNs. I mean, there are different types of nurses. We're talking, I think, primarily RNs. My wife, for example, is a physical therapist, and now they are requiring physical therapists to get clinical doctorates. I'm just wondering whether... what's going on in nursing education, or whether we're tightening up standards or requirements, whether that's playing any role in all of this.
Yes, and I'm going to, I like your drift, but I'm going to kind of just put a little nuance to it and okay. Put it into the nursing world. So one of the things that has been, happening, particularly since about 2010, is that the nurses coming into the workforce have increasingly wanted to become an advanced practice nurse. A nurse practitioner is a good example of that. And that started to really rev up from 2010 forward. And so what happened is a good number of hospitals would hire a new nurse. And it takes a while to get on your feet, to be onboarded and to really, be able to come to the unit and really have your feet solidly on the ground. Well, many hospitals were experiencing that. Just as some of those nurses were hitting that mark, they said, I'm going off to graduate school to become a nurse practitioner. Mm. Now, the interest so large that we have estimated and published this result that we feel that of roughly 80,000 nurses between 2010 and 2017 were lost to the labor market, that in otherwise would have been in the workforce working, but instead they are now pursuing their graduate education. So you combine the normal background shortages, the retirement of nurses, particularly in those, critical care areas, and then, a pretty healthy number of nurses leaving for graduate education, you were seeing shortages of nurses popping up around the country, not causing a big Cat 5 shortage, but certainly affecting hospitals. And then COVID comes with this massive demand and just a surge of incredibly sick patients. These are not your normal sick patients. These were incredible sick. They needed immediate help. And it was an all hands, you know, seeking of nurses with this experience to fight back and save people's lives. So, it was a,
I want to ask one more
time.
Question,
yeah,
about
sure.
the sociology of all of this. In the past, there were many women who were mm-hmm. motivated because they were prompted by history or tradition to think about education or nursing.
Mm-hmm.
Then the world opened up to women. And not that there aren't male nurses, of course there are, and you're one in your past life. But the question is, what impact has that had historically?
It's had some more, I would say, economic impacts in that so many times when we've had, say, recessions in our economy, what would happen is we would see surges of nurses entering into the labor market. Some maybe were out for temporary reasons, or others had withdrawn to or just reduced their hours to part-time. Some had even left the market altogether. But when we had these recessions, spouses either had lost their job or worried that they would lose their jobs. And so when the recession occurred, it would act as if a magnet was just drawing nurses back into hospitals so that they could maintain family income, get their health care, get the family's health care benefits. So you've had this sort of surge attracting mostly women back into the workforce. And we've not had that, in a sense, with the current shortage, because this actually hit hospitals. Hospitals were having to close. So we didn't get the benefits of a normal shortage. I think the other thing that historically women have felt that they have been taken advantage of by some hospitals and some priorities of hospitals because they were women and because they were willing to provide this work. And that has helped sort of tender some of the mistrust and the longstanding sort of poor relationships that some hospitals have with their nurses, not all. And I think that has been a kind of a sociological factor that is, you know, now playing out when you have some hospitals that unfortunately furloughed their nurses. Didn't send a very positive message that we care about you and that we're behind you. So I think it stoked some of these pre-existing, you know, uneasy feelings that nurses have had.
And I've got to say this, that there was a period when I saw all these hospitals beginning to go to outpatient facilities and grow outside of the hospital setting. And I found a very, very interesting thing, and I wondered what impact it had on people who were still serving patients in hospitals.
Yeah.
And it seemed as if we were pushing people out the door the next day after a surgery. And yet, everyone I talked to who was in the hospital over, you know, the last decade said the whole fulcrum of the healthcare system is the nurse. I mean, don't talk about their doctors very often.
Yeah.
Many of them, of course, are now what they call hospitalists. They're not even their doctor. But I hear great stories about great care from nurses.
Two things I'd say on that. As hospitals opened up more and more outpatient and ambulatory clinics, I look at this as a good thing, because many of the inpatient nurses, as they aged up, you know, they were getting sort of physically and mentally exhausted from a lot of hard work in the hospital, taking care of growing numbers of very complicated patients. As our baby boom generation is aged up, we see a lot of people with multiple conditions, obesity, lung disease, cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and maybe throw in some Alzheimer's and 20 different meds, and a doctor and a nurse have to deal with that. That's tough. And so after a while, many nurses say, you know, I love my job. I love my career. I just need to do less of it and let me work in the outpatient facilities. I bring my experience, but it is not that intense grind. So I feel that has kept a lot of nurses in the workforce, that development. Tangent to this, Larry, and it may not be on your point, but I think it's a relevant consideration for people listening on the program. In the past, nurses have been largely seen as a labor cost to hospitals. Now, hospitals are labor-intensive. It's a labor-intensive industry. Lots of people. Nurses are one of the highest paid in that category of labor, and there's a lot of nurses. So hospitals have always had sort of an economic interest to keep their labor costs low, and that means to be looking at nurses. And that has sort of not always gone well with nurses who feel maybe they're cutting back on staffing or holding back a little bit on them, and that's been part of a tension. But as our healthcare system has shifted to pay hospitals more increasingly on the basis of what's called value. So are you producing the really good outcomes we want of you, and are you keeping your costs low? What we've discovered is that nurses play a big role in the improvement of outcomes and in keeping costs low. So now hospitals are beginning to see, well, yeah, my nursing staff is a labor cost, but they're also really now playing a big role in maintaining good, healthy revenue. Because if we don't produce good outcomes and quality and keep our costs low, we get less payment. Mm. So this shift is beginning, and I think if we can get through COVID, we can get back to a new economic relationship that I think will favor patients. They'll get better care. Hospitals will improve their funding. And nurses, because they bring value to the organization, will receive more benefits and more of what is needed to provide the care that many really want to provide but feel they aren't able to.
Professor Peter Bearhouse is with us from Montana State University, one of the true experts in the country on health care workforce, its dynamics, its economics. And I know I saw a podcast that you did online talking about how good are the nurse workforce forecasts. And I've seen forecasts suggesting that we are, by the end of 2029, I think it is, going to need about 221,900 or 7% increase in the RN workforce. How good are those projections? And, you know, how important are they for us to understand them? Because I assume we as a nation, you as a forecaster and an economist, and the healthcare industry want to take some action to remedy whatever shortage may be viewed as possible or expected.
The best thing I want to do is to be proven wrong, that my forecasts were wrong. And that's because people actually listened to them and it motivated them to act, and their actions led to, hey, we avoided that shortage that Bearhouse and his colleagues said was going to happen a long time ago. So that's sort of a philosophical approach I take to this. I look at, you know, these forecasts rely on both forecasts of supply and forecasts of demand, and then putting the two together to see if we're going to, you know, be in equilibrium and have enough nurses or not. Our team is focused mostly on the supply forecasts. We develop models that have been proven to be very accurate, and we constantly improve them and have them peer-reviewed. Our models, Larry, suggest, now this is just before the COVID began, last time we ran these, using data through 2019, that we would grow the workforce over this decade by about 1 million nurses. So we would be able to numerically replace the 640,000 RNs that we expect will retire out of the baby boom generation. They'll leave this decade. We will replace them numerically and add another 1 million nurses. Now, that's the supply projections, and these were favorable and positive. the demand side, I have a lot of respect for people who try to do that, but too often the case is they just are unable to reasonably forecast changes in demand, like what we have with COVID, for example. And so the demand estimates have generally missed the mark over time. So I'm less paying attention to demand and focus more on supply. And the reason I have a couple reasons, but the big one is that, you know, even if COVID wasn't around, we have growing needs in our healthcare, in our society for healthcare that will require nurses. And quickly, I would say the growth of behavioral and mental health was already in sort of a crisis and a shortage before COVID. It's worsened since then. We have, according to the government estimates, roughly 80 million Americans with inadequate access to primary care. And we know that the physician workforce, while it has tried, just hasn't been able to get its growth to manage that demand. So more of that demand for primary care will come on to the nursing workforce. Our society is aging, and we have close to 77, 80 million baby boomers retiring and aging. They require more health care, more intensity of care. That is increasingly falling on nursing. And then maternal mortality has risen, and it is a persistent problem that, again, will require more of nurses than it has in the past. So I'm glad to see this growth of our workforce that we projected. Now, I'm going to go past where you asked, but if you'll allow me,
of course,
I'll just say this. What I feel we need to be thinking about is, and while I'm so glad that you and I are talking, is the last big Category 5 shortage I mentioned occurred back in 2001. And it was a big, big shortage, 126,000 open positions that hospitals couldn't fill. Now, it largely developed because years earlier, there was a decade in which, the 90s, hospitals were under pressure to lower their costs. Competition was being tried in HMOs, and that hospitals need to quickly lower their costs to be price competitive and get these contracts with HMOs. In part, they did this by lowering the growth of employment of registered nurses. Nurses responded loudly and persistent, and with assertions that quality of care was declining, safety was declining, things weren't well. The images were pervasive, and there were marches in the street. Congress got involved. Studies were done, or the unintended consequence was that interest in nursing dropped from 1995 among freshmen students, according to these surveys that we watched. Enrollment dropped 4 to 6% each year from 95 to 2000. And so these negative images just have a very powerful ability to affect parents who may not be thinking nursing is such a good thing now, given what we're seeing with COVID. And I worry that those projections we just talked about a minute ago could fall apart if the negative images, really constant, the unchecked messaging, the exaggerations, the untruthful statements are not replaced by positive images. We could lose those projections going forward. And so I'm glad we can talk about this, because I fear we better start changing our tune here, or we could have a repeat of the 90s.
When you talk about focusing on supply as opposed to demand, there's one other piece to demand that I'm wondering how we can even begin to factor in, and that is long-haul COVID. I mean, we've got many, many millions of people who've had it, and mm-hmm. we just don't know what kind of care they're going to require. And while I'm at that, I'm wondering also about the Affordable Care Act
and maybe even expansion of that under the Democrats going forward, because that gives people more access. So there's more need for nurses and for other medical professionals. And the one other piece to this, you talk about the HMOs of the 90s. When I hear about what's going on inside hospitals today in my community, I'm hearing some really tough stories about the way that they're squeezing the bottom line again through all of the consolidation. In my state of Connecticut, Yale, New Haven, and Hartford Hospital and Trinity control just about every hospital in the state.
Yeah, you've got several things I think are really important. One is the long haulers. And, I mean, you mentioned a minute ago some of these demand estimates. Well, no one would have possibly even thought about COVID, let alone the long haulers or whatever else is out there. And you're right, with the ACA now being ruled constitutional, legal going forward, I agree with you. The emphasis will be to increase access to care, which will be more demand on nurses. And I know of no one who can really forecast these with real, you know, integrity or accuracy. Maybe that's the better word. So that's why we focus on the supply. And then you have, as you said, the consolidation in the hospital industry that at one level you can understand they're trying to, you know, get the greater economy of scale and lower their costs and be responsive. But on the other hand, it raises fears about price increases and lack of competition and sort of monopoly power that could, you know, make this transition into the post-COVID world more complicated. Perhaps, but I'm getting out of my specialty or my knowledge space there, so I'll be quiet.
Well, I do have to ask another question. America hasn't been lately the most welcoming of immigrants, and yet I see whenever I'm interacting these days with the medical community, many more international practitioners and international, specialists and, those that we need. But are we going to have to open up our borders and say, look, we do not have a very positive birth rate in America today, and boomers like me, doctor, are hanging on, and we want to be here for a lot longer than people told us we would, and we just can't imagine the world without us, you know, the baby boomers. So the question is, what are the impacts of those things?
Larry, you have done your homework. This is good. No, in the past, hospitals would respond to shortages by, you know, doing just about anything they could to avoid raising wages. Because raising wages meant they would have to increase, you know, for everybody, not just to attract new people, but everybody that they hired. And as I said, these were big labor costs. So that was sort of what they wanted to do last. They would try to work with temporary staffing agencies or travelers, and in very common, attract nurses from other countries. And that actually helped many, many organizations weather these shortages until things could get back on track domestically. It raised all kinds of issues. Some of the nursing unions in this country said no. You know, those are our jobs, and they resisted. Some of the professional associations said the same thing. Others said, oh, these are low-quality nurses, and, you know, how dare hospitals do that? Mostly, you know, exaggerated. But that industry and some of these nations have really improved the education and the preparedness of nurses. But then it also raised questions of brain drain. How dare the U.S. bring in nurses from other countries that needed nurses maybe more than we did? Again, a little bit of exaggeration and so forth, and facts don't always bear that out. But nevertheless, it's there. Why I go into that history a little bit is, if we find in the next couple of years enrollment declining in our education programs in this country as a consequence of the negative imagery, the turn off to nursing that we talked about, we could be in a world of saying we need nurses from other countries. I think that will be heavily demanded by hospitals and healthcare systems if we can't produce what we need. We'll have these questions all again, and you and I could be talking about this in, in a while.
Recommended, advocated for 80% of RNs to hold bachelor's degrees. Mm-hmm. I was reading that now only 64.2% have that. You talked about the complexity of the cases, older people needing a lot more attention, a lot of chronic disease. America's a Hail Mary country. Give me a pill. Help me, because I don't want to take responsibility. So what does all that tell us in composite?
So the evidence from a number of studies have shown, both domestically in Canada and in other countries, have shown that when hospitals staff their nursing units with nurses, higher proportions of nurses with a Bachelor of Science degree, the mortality rate for their surgical patients is lower. So there's a better risk if you're a patient to not have complications or worse if you're being taken care of by nurses with a bachelor's degree. The movement has been strong in that area. A goal of 80% was established by a National Academy of an Institute of Medicine recommendation in 2010. And I think that's a good move to do that. It brings up quality to where we need it, just for the reasons that you mentioned. Patients are complicated, and it's not getting easier or simpler, and we need really well-prepared nurses going forward. Many of these countries that supply nurses to nursing are all bachelor degree nurses. They've seen that. They've said, this is how we're going to be successful. We have to provide a product that will be welcomed by the United States healthcare delivery system.
The concept of the traveling nurse today, it seems to me that that's a zero-sum game. I mean, it's the same number of people moving around, getting great advantage for a short period of time, perhaps not being accepted widely by the people who stay in their own community. That phenomenon, I just need to raise it because it's getting so much attention.
Yeah, and Larry, I agree with you. It is sort of zero-sum. I mean, it's not like they're just over there, not in game, and then can come in. They're part of the team. And what I'm a little confused by it, because on the one hand, I see these nurses as generally pretty well put together, high quality. They're firms that move them around, have done much better jobs than they did years ago. So I look at them as pretty experienced nurses. They bring with them ideas and experience and innovations of what worked or didn't work in the last hospital that I was at when we had these types of patients. We thought this would work. It didn't. So this new hospital that I'm in, maybe you should try things that we've found work somewhere else. So they bring with them innovation and experience. They help a hospital get through truly crisis moments where there's just no other way to manage or else shut down the units and turn away patients. So they do that, but they get a large wage for this. They get a big premium. And I understand that and think that's fine. On the other hand, some nurses who see these travelers come in and get this high earnings, they are saying, hey, what about me? You know, I'm here, I'm working all the time, and why aren't you paying me? And so that causes, you know, this trust and being upset with the hospitals. And I think the hospitals are trying to help the nurses by saying, we're trying, and here's the only way we can deal with it, and then getting criticized for it because they have to pay this higher wage. It's a bad situation, and a lot of people are making a lot of hay trying to make it worse versus stepping back and realize, you know, what else are we to do? Where else are we going to grab these people? Because you're right, it's zero sum. Hospital can't just immediately train up people, nurses, to be experienced and ready for these intensive care units. That takes time. Huh. Nursing education programs can't just stay open on the weekend and say, oh, yeah, we can train a bunch, and they'll be ready in 2 weeks. That just doesn't happen. So we're stuck, and I wish people would try to make more positive out of it than tearing it down.
And when I think about all the technology that these nurses have to use, it just is daunting to me. By the way, why don't we talk about, or why aren't we talking about, or is there a doctor shortage?
Yes, there are forecasts of shortages of both primary care physicians and non-primary care physicians. This isn't new. We've had these forecasts for, oh, at least, I would say at least 10 years, at least for sure with the primary care. And that's sort of a separate set of issues, but there has been expansion of medical schools. There have been expansions of graduate medical education slots or residency slots, but it takes so much longer to educate physicians, you know, anywhere from 8 to 12 years or so. So it's a long pipeline, and the numbers are small. We have the advanced practice nursing workforce, which has a different educational model and is able to respond to these needs quicker and with high quality and really great costs. So there's answers to that physician shortage, but then you that's probably a whole nother discussion.
Yeah, I don't want to mention that. We have just a few moments. What keeps you from sleeping well at night that you really want somebody listening to this podcast to walk away understanding? They're going to hear a lot of stories in the coming period about this nursing shortage. It's not going to disappear miraculously. What do you want them to have as a point of reference when they do hear about this?
I want to maybe raise an issue of trust in society and trust in the profession. The nursing profession has enjoyed several decades of number one rankings by the Gallup poll for the most trusted profession by wide margins, 20 percentage points above that of physicians or others. So it's a big, big endorsement. Other polls, big, big surveys have shown nurses were much more trusted to improve the delivery of healthcare than physicians and hospitals and others by, again, wide margins. This enduring trust of nurses has resulted in many benefits of foundations that have given money to support the growth of our profession, to train nurses, to support them in quality of care initiatives, and really a long list of a very positive and, you know, a lot of money that has supported the profession because of that trust. Now today, we have a situation where some nurses are choosing not to get vaccinated. And members of the public, I fear, could be saying, hold on, you know, I trust you because I know you will keep me safe and protect me in circumstances that could harm me. And you're not getting vaccinated. You're not keeping me safe. What's going on here? And so there could be a loss of some of this trust. And on the other hand, nurses looking at the public and saying, hey, you know, the first go around with COVID, we gave it our all and some of us died and we saved thousands of lives. We didn't have vaccines. Now we have vaccines. Why aren't you vaccinating? Now you're a threat to my life, to my family's life, to my children, my spouse. And there's a potential deterioration in the trust both ways. That's what keeps me up, Larry, because I don't know how big that is, will it grow, and what are the unintended impacts going forward once we get past COVID. I don't have answers, but that's what I worry about.
Well, in a day and an age where there's much about America today that really baffles me,
This is one of them. I mean, you know, I can't imagine somebody in the medical field who has seen what these individuals have seen would not want to get vaccinated. It just befuddles me. It really does. Well, we're not going to answer that today, but you've answered so many other questions for us. Dr. Peter Bearhouse, I can't thank you enough for joining us today to talk about nursing, the economics, and all the implications. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you so much, and I really appreciate your taking the time and interest to look at this story and help us sort of reverse course and get some positive messages out there.
All right. Thank you again for being with us on America Trends.
Thank you.